I'm just going to read from the back of the book because it's so well done. It's called by Eden Robinson, the most dangerous poet in Canada. Stephen Collis was sued for $5.6 million by U.S. energy giant Kinder Morgan for opposing the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion. The lawyers accused his words of bearing instruction. Quote, underneath the poetry is a description of how the barricade was constructed. In the new book, Once in Blockadia, Collis turns from the appropriation of the poet's dissonant voice to the complexity of collective struggle during the unfolding crises of the Anthropocene. The most dangerous poet in Canada.
How about that?
That's not an exaggeration.
I don't know. I mean, if anyone knows me personally, they have a hard time imagining me as a dangerous person.
Because you're not a violent person.
Yeah.
But you're dangerous to special interests.
Well, yeah, and it's that old thing we've had in our heads for so long, this idea of speaking truth to power, or the power that poets possess because they're using language in a particular way that people stop and listen to and pay attention to. It's all those old things that sometimes you sort of think, yeah, well, we'd like to say that, but how true is that? But yeah, when a lawyer starts quoting you in court, it shifts that a bit, right? You go, oh, okay, maybe these words didn't matter after all. Maybe they were worried about it somehow.
Were you scared?
I guess so. It's, you know, there's things like shock, and when you're worried, about your family who are kind of freaking out about it, and stuff like that. So it's a kind of fear, but mostly it was just like shock and bewilderment, I think. I guess it is a kind of fear, because there's that kind of creepy tingling down your spine, you know, like sitting in the courtroom. We're in this courtroom that was built for a terrorism trial like 25 years ago, and it's got a bulletproof glass wall separating the gallery from the courtroom.
This is in downtown Vancouver.
Yeah, yeah. So because it wasn't a criminal trial, I'm not sitting up there with my lawyers. I'm just in the gallery with everybody else. So you're sitting there in the gallery with all these people behind this bulletproof glass wall, listening to the lawyers talk, and it's the sound is piped into you from the other side of the wall. And they're saying your name over and over again, and quoting you, and showing images, and it's just, it is, it's if it's fear, I don't know, but it's that particular fear when, you know, it's kind of Orwellian, right? When the machinery has picked you up and decided to use you, this massive, abstract, strange force, authority, is very materially using you to achieve its ends, and so you just feel kind of helpless and tiny and horrible.
Make an example out of you.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Well, that was the whole point, right? Just to strike fear into you so you'll stop doing what you're doing, but also to tell other people, look what happens if you do speak up.
Yet you ended up winning, and you ended up preventing the dissolution of your vast wealth.
Ah, my vast wealth.
What are they going to get? They take your house? I mean, what would they do? Take your house? And what else? Can they legally take your house? And
I think if they won the court case and a judge goes, yeah, you owe them $5 million, I guess they start by taking anything that's, you know, fungible goods.
Do you think they take your books?
It's a good question.
You know, are those
do they value
anything?
Them? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Would they value that as anything? It's hard to say. Would they? Imagine that. They took my archive. It's now located in... they can sell it to a university library,
now in
right?
Texas. Yeah, exactly. You know, don't give them any ideas.
No,
they're probably just listening to you now.
Yeah, well, let's hope not. Let's hope not.
But you won.
Well, in a way. I mean, yes and no. I mean, there were sort of two parts to what went on in court. The first part was all about them trying to get an injunction so that they could exclude people from the mountain site where they were doing their survey work and arrest people who got in their way. And they actually won that. And they got their order, and like 120 some odd people were arrested, and on it went. But where we kind of won was they came back and the court went, okay, we need more time, because the judge gave them like 10 days so they had to finish their work. The injunction has a term limit, of course. And the judge this time threw it out and said, no, you can't, because they had actually screwed up some coordinates and stuff like that, which our lawyers, well, actually some activists discovered, told our lawyers. Our lawyers went, what? You know, they had the coordinates wrong? We're kicking them out of court now. So we won that side of it. Which put an end to what was actually happening on the mountain at the time. And then they dropped the lawsuit after that, once they realized, okay, well, this is all said and done, the kind of the working they wanted to get done, or were able to get done. So then they dropped the lawsuit. So that it was a PR victory, though, right? The mm-hmm. company realized that was a bad move, because media, public opinion was all behind us and thought this company was being a total bully.
Right. But they... is the pipeline still going to go through?
It's been approved by our government.
That's what I understand. Yep. Now, the new Prime Minister, Trudeau, yep. rejected one that further north.
Yeah.
Was that the Enbridge?
That's right.
Right. So he rejected the Enbridge, but then approved this one.
Yeah. So it's kind of a trade-off. It was a pretty easy trade to make because that one was in a lot of trouble. That one was tied up in the courts and was already, even under the previous government, looking like it's never going to happen. So that was an easy one to get rid of. That was a lost cause.
Because of Indigenous people standing up
to it? Largely because of Indigenous people. Yeah. So the only hope now with this one is Indigenous people yet again, you know, finding the resources to get into court and fight it.
When you look at Indigenous people standing up and fighting and winning in this country and Indigenous people at the Dakota Access Pipeline not winning and, you know, now with Trump getting in, even a less chance, is that one of the differences between the U.S. and Canada?
Maybe, but I think it's a pretty minimal difference. What's tilting the tables here right now is that large parts of British Columbia, most of British Columbia, this province, there were never any treaties signed. So the Supreme Court of Canada actually recognizes that Aboriginal title still holds over this land.
Unceded territory.
Unceded territory. So this is a huge thing. If the Supreme Court of Canada, when they articulate what they mean by Aboriginal title and the fact that the Aboriginal people have this, it literally means that they own this land. This is not Canada. Mm-hmm. As far as the Supreme Court of Canada is concerned, most of British Columbia is not Canada, legally.
Lawrence Paul Yuxwillipton wants $10,000 a cloud, and
he's a wonderful trickster, you know, kind of figure because you know he says these really kind of hardline political position he takes, one I totally support because it's one about Indigenous autonomy and rights and things like that, but he does it in this playful, funny, humorous way that he toys with power in a wonderful way, you know.